Good morning. Welcome to On the Couch Radio Show with Isaiah and William here on Praise 106.1. Put on your life jacket as together we navigate the waters of life. Now let's begin the show.
Good morning, Baltimore and beyond. Welcome to On the Couch Radio, a show where conversations take place that might not come up at the dinner table. A place where you can be free to express your mental and emotional health without judgment or stigma. A place where nothing is taboo. We are your hosts, Isaiah and William, and today we are addressing the topic, the mental health fallout of physical abuse. Join us today as we navigate through this journey, and we welcome our guest, Miss Anita Washington, also known as ThatAnitaLive.com.
Yes, and hey, everybody, this is Isaiah. I just wanted to give you guys a little bit of background on Miss Anita Washington. Miss Anita Washington holds her master's in education and her master's in business administration. She is the CEO and founder of ThatAnitaLive.com. She's a personal development counselor and media host, helping women become emotionally whole, healed, and healthy so they can rise above the glass ceiling and feel free to live true to their own personality, spirit, and character. Miss Anita, matter of fact, that Anita, thank you so much for joining us today, girl.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, tell us a little bit about the things you are involved with and the work that you do.
Well, right now, I am producing a television show over in the Northern Virginia area called That Anita Live.
Hey, now.
And most people see it on YouTube that are not in that area, but on the show, I like to showcase women that have been through devastating circumstances and then ask them about the techniques and the tips that they use to overcome so that other people can share those techniques and tips also.
Keep going. You good, girl. You good.
On YouTube, the channel is That Anita Live. You can get to it by thatanitalive.com/YouTube.
Say it one more time for our listeners so that they can get it.
That Anita Live. .com/YouTube.
Okay.
There are interviews there with people that have been molested, raped, physical abuse. Tomorrow, the show that comes out is a young woman that fell madly in love with a man and then found out that she contracted HIV from that man.
Mm.
But she chose to marry that man anyway.
Wow. Mm.
So tomorrow, that show drops and she tells you why she chose to marry that man anyway.
What time is that again?
The video usually releases around 6:37 in the morning. So by the time you get up, it'll be there.
Wow.
Sounds heavy, but she's happy to still be here.
Yeah.
And be HIV positive. So
wow,
it's a good thing.
So can you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got involved in this line of work?
I got in this line of work. I say that usually you go into a career that you wanted to experience help in. And
yes.
I grew up in a very interesting household where my father was a homicidal alcoholic.
Mm.
My mom was really in denial, and my brothers were very physically abusive. I was the only girl and the youngest. So it rose in me a very caring and compassionate side to people that experience traumatic circumstances. As you read, I went into counseling initially.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in counseling for a number of years, burnt out, went over into contracts for a while. So I guess now you could say that I'm coming full circle, coming back to my first love, being in a counseling setting,
mm-hmm.
even though I'm not the one that's providing the services.
So you talked a little bit about your dad being a homicidal alcoholic. And before we go any further, just for the sake of our listeners and our viewers, Mr. Betts, Mr. William, can you define for us a little bit about physical abuse?
Sure.
Let's just clarify what it means.
Sure. Physical abuse is the use of physical force that may result in bodily injury, physical pain, or impairment.
So let's clarify, and I definitely want you guys to hear me when I say this. Anyone can be physically abused. You know, so often we talk about men who abuse women, but it doesn't matter how big you are, how small you are, what size you are, the color you are. anybody can be a victim, excuse me, of physical abuse. And, you know, Miss Anita, you were talking a little bit about your dad being a homicidal alcoholic.
Yes.
And you also talked a little bit about, or I don't know if you mentioned it or if I read it, a little bit about the physical abuse that you sustained from your siblings. And that's often a dynamic that is experienced but not talked about.
Correct.
So can you just be a little transparent with our listeners and just share a little bit about your story as that's concerned?
From the sibling abuse perspective,
both,
because that
actually
is something that's it's not heavily researched and it's not heavily talked about.
Yes.
But until we begin to discuss and attack all of the abuses that happen under one roof, our communities will continue to suffer.
Yes.
From my perspective, my youngest brother is like 6-7 years older than me, and it goes up in probably 2 and 3 year intervals from there.
Okay.
And growing up in the South, being the only girl, my gender cast me into a certain role. However, I didn't get that memo because I saw them as siblings, as equals.
Mm.
But they saw me as someone that they were supposed to have power over and control. So whenever they wanted something done and told me to do it, and from their perspective, from their minds, I was supposed to just get up and get it done. Go put my clothes on the line.
Mm.
Or, for instance, one of my brothers had actually moved out. Okay. Supposedly moved on with his life. He was actually just living across town with a young lady.
Mm-hmm.
My mom worked nights. They would get highly inebriated. They would get drunk over on the other side of town. And then because her brothers didn't allow the physical abuse to happen to her, he would then come back over and tell mom's home, no matter what time it was, 9, 10, 11, 12 o'clock at night. And whatever he said, I was just supposed to do it. So if he hit the button, the power button to turn the TV off and told me to go to bed, I was just supposed to go. It didn't happen like that.
Right.
So when the argument commenced, and then the argument would grow up into a physical fight, you have to remember that this person is 10 years older than me, twice my size, twice my weight. Whatever he picked up to hit me with is what happened.
Wow. That is absolutely riveting. This is going to be a good one today, folks. Some folks might get set free. If you would like to join in the conversation, please give us a call at 443-380-2803. Again, 443-380-2803. You also can hit us on any of our social media sites, or you can email us at On The Couch Radio. That's all one word, On The Couch Radio at gmail.com.
Yes. So continue. I'm sorry.
The part with my father being a homicidal alcoholic, he actually tried to set the house on fire 3 times. While we were in the house, once when I was a toddler, and twice when I was in my teens.
Wow.
He would always argue.
Were you all in the house when this happened?
Yes.
Wow.
The first time, my mom caught him and brought it to a stop. The second time, I caught him and brought it to a stop. My mom happened to be asleep. It was in the middle of the day. And the third time, I was actually away. I was at one of the neighborhood parks, and a couple of kids from the neighborhood came running over to come get me because the fire truck was at my house. They were all excited and jumping up and down saying, come now, come now. And I was just kind of moving slow because I was like, okay, here we go with this again. I knew what it was once they said fire truck.
So let me ask you this. With your interactions with your friends, your community, and dealing with all of that, what's going on inside you? I mean, that's a lot going on in one household. And you talk about being in the South, and my family's from the South. And one of the things I know about the South is anything that happens in the South is everybody's business. And, you know, they talk about all the secrets that happen in the South, but there's really no secrets. It's just not discussed openly, but it's kind of talked about amongst everybody else in close corners. And how was it going to school and just growing up in the community and facing people knowing that everybody knew what was going on in your household? I mean,
well, it wasn't just that everybody knew from my household. My father was a school teacher.
Oh, my goodness.
And he was inebriated every day that ended in Y. Okay. Mm. He was a school teacher in school, teaching school. So, I mean, it was highly embarrassing. But because of the time period that I grew up in, because a lot of the kids now are bullied and they get talked about and teased. But back then, one, almost every household had some sort of problem on my side of town.
Mm-hmm.
Then people were a lot more compassionate and understanding back then, because there's no way I would have survived growing up now. Back then, if I needed to go to an assistant principal's office and just lay on the floor and take a nap, I could do that because they knew 9 times out of 10 the previous night, my household was just a circus.
So what amazes me is that everybody knew, but nobody took steps.
Oh, that's the South. That's the South. We, the immediate community knows. And that's what they mean when they say what happens in this house stays in this house. It happens here in our community, and we keep it here. Mm. But don't you dare go off to another city or off to another state and talk about what's going on back here.
Wow.
So people suffer in silence.
They suffer in silence, but they also feel like, well, I can't do anything about it because, well, she does have, her mom is there. Or I can't do anything about it because, you know, I got two kids I can't feed. Or, you know, this too shall pass. I heard that a lot.
And again, everybody, feel free to call in. Our number is 443-380-2803. Today, you can log in on Facebook and watch us live on Facebook Live at ICEA Ragsdale or On the Couch Radio. You can also communicate with us through
through email.
Thank you. Through email, onthecouchradio@gmail.com, or through Instagram or Twitter. I'm sorry, Miss Anita, go ahead. I just want to make sure our listeners know how they can reach us.
That's fine. Call in and ask any question you want. You're not going to get the help you need until you ask the question.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about the grooming process, because now we can shift a little bit. And thank you so much for your transparency. So now you're using a lot of your experience and your education to work now with women who have also been victims of emotional and mental abuse and different things like that. Just tell us a little bit about, before a situation escalates to the point of physical abuse, can we talk a little bit about the grooming process that takes place? You know, because nobody shows up on a first date and smacks somebody, you know,
you know,
like there's always a process that gets us to that point. So can we talk a little bit about your experience with that, with at least in regards to the women that you're serving and helping?
Well, with the women I'm serving and helping, what I see as the commonalities in the grooming process is that it always starts verbal.
Yes.
And it may start with just an insult. It may start with just a put down, or he may begin or she may begin to pick at the insecurities that you have. For instance, if you are weight conscious and you could be skinny as a rail, but he will continue to remind you that you're overweight, or there's gaslighting in where you may leave the house for the evening, come back, and all of the lights are dim. But when you flip the switch, it's expecting the lights to get higher, to get more light. He says, no, I don't see anything wrong.
You use the term gaslighting. Can you explain that for our audience?
Gaslighting is when someone uses a situation to make you feel insecure, anxiety, or where something isn't real.
Mm-hmm. So it's actually a technique of sorts.
It is very much
a technique of manipulation, a technique to keep a person stuck, almost, if you will.
Yes.
Okay.
One of the first steps.
Wow. So by the time the women get to you, are they at the gaslighting phase, or are they at this grooming phase, or?
Well, with the women that I interview on my show, I try to interview women that are healed and that can speak about it without being emotional, from the standpoint of crying or bringing the audience down, and where we all have our own negative experiences or our traumas that we can talk about. What I want the women on my show to give the community is there is another side. Mm. And if you keep working through it, if first you have to get out of the situation, but if you keep working through it, there is another side, and you can experience a peace and a happiness on a daily basis. It doesn't go up or down with somebody else's mood or with somebody else's day. How he feels or how she feels then determines what my day is going to be like. You don't have to live like that.
Yeah. And so what is the youngest person so far that you have been able to bring on your show?
On the show, I'd say probably the youngest is maybe 21.
Mm-hmm. And so at 21, how many years of abuse, or what has their experience been? Because 21 is young.
It is very
21,
much so.
I mean.
Very much so.
You're still a baby. But
when you experience molestation, as far back as she could remember, is probably from the age of 3 up until about 10. Mm-hmm. And then getting to 15 and experiencing a guidance counselor that could actually help her recognize, accept, admit, and begin to that healing process to move forward. 21 is a little experienced in this world, unfortunately.
So, Anita, what do you say to the couple who they say that this is just how we function. We hit each other from time to time.
I think that's a pitiful acceptance that you've chosen to live in.
Mm.
And you can be exposed to another type of life.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to. And it doesn't say that you two have to break up or she has to leave him or he has to leave her. You recognize it as a couple. You can fix it as a couple.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because you have each other to lean on. You have each other to bring that positive energy. Mm-hmm. But somebody has to teach you those other techniques because you've never been exposed to it. So you don't have it in your baggage to pull from.
So you don't believe it's best for a couple to stay in that minutia?
No, not necessarily. Okay. Depends on the couple. But no.
I understand. Well, what do you say to the parent who feels that physical intervention is best? That's the way they choose to move.
I think for that parent, it depends on, I call it a tammeter, because I like to think of people's energy and how they move, their personality.
Yeah.
If you pay attention to your child from birth, that will tell you whether or not you need to use a physical type of discipline, or if you can just yell at that child and shut it down. Or we are all very different, yet we are all very alike. So it depends on the child.
You know, and I just want to add a little bit to that. I personally am one that does not have a problem with utilizing physical discipline with disciplining a
Mom,
child.
Mom, be smacking the back of that head.
But I want us to make sure that on the radio that we're being responsible, mm-hmm. and that we define the fact that there is a difference between physical abuse and physical discipline. And when I say physical discipline, I'm not talking about just beating your child because you're angry, because you're mad, you know, to the point where you're leaving scars and bruises and, you know, you're leaving your child in a very broken place. I'm talking about the type of physical discipline where you have taken a moment as the parent, as the adult in the situation, you've gotten yourself under control, you breathed it out, you know, you thought it out, and then, you know, you possibly inflict some type of tap, love tap, whatever you want to, you know, because I'm trying to be careful, you know, on the radio, you know, but, and people can't see my expression to thoroughly understand what I'm saying,
mm-hmm.
But then even after you spank your child, I think it's very important to go back and love your child and bring them back to a space of wholeness. And I can just admit, you know, I was a child who was spanked and I needed to be spanked. And, you know, quite frankly, no matter how much you talk, no matter how much you reason, no matter how much you wrote it down, you made me write it a million times. I personally did not even think you were serious until I saw that belt. You know, I was that child that required mm-hmm. that, you know, mm-hmm. but fortunately my daughter does not. You know, I can kind of look at her a certain way and she mm-hmm. don't want no problems at the river, you know, so.
And I think we have to be very responsible with this conversation.
Absolutely.
Idea.
Absolutely.
Because I hold a different perspective. OK,
mm-hmm.
I don't want to villainize someone, a parent or a guardian who chooses to utilize physical discipline. I don't want to villainize that person. However, I can strongly say I'm not a proponent of it.
Okay.
I've gotten enough beatings, if you will, for everybody in this room. So I know the impact of the physical abuse that parents think is quote unquote disciplining your child.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it's just too much. And like you said, it's important to know your child,
mm-hmm.
but I'm not a proponent of going hands on. And again, I understand, I very hesitantly say there might be an instance or two where it may benefit a situation or a child to get their attention with some type of physical intervention. That's just not a road that I choose to walk, because I determined that I was going to do better and I was going to be better. So I think we got to be very responsible and very careful with this conversation.
Well, and I think that that's true, but I also think that while you have the right to your perspective, you know, I still am a big proponent, as being someone who's worked at DJS, you know, who's worked with some of my clients, that you have to know when to say when, you know, because one thing that I thoroughly believe is that I will always be the one to spank my child. I will never allow a system to discipline my child.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, if I feel that talking and setting boundaries is not strong enough for my child to operate within, mm-hmm. I will escalate it to the next level. I just never want to be that parent that has to become a person of the system. But if I can utilize other forms of discipline and my child is responsive to that, you know, then absolutely. Now, what I definitely am not is a proponent of ever leaving a mark or a bruise or, you know, anything like that. And I do believe that there's a fine line between abuse and discipline. And
You're right. It is a fine line between getting the best out of our children and motivating them to do their best. And, you know, what's too much? You know, it really is a fine line. So
what do I do when I'm out of options? When I've tried the boundaries and I've tried the verbal scolding and the child just does not respond to any of that type of discipline?
It may be time to reach out for help. A lot of times if we involve someone who's outside of the situation, they may be able to see the situation differently. But again, I'm not a proponent of physical intervention. That's just not. I mean, we all have our own stories and we come from different perspectives. And based on the road that I've walked, that's not something that I would be able to subscribe to.
Okay. Well, we all have our own perspective on those things. And, you know, I think that's the great thing. That's what makes us people is that we all kind of, you know, we all bring our own past histories and what has worked for us and what we feel is best. And, you know, one of the things that I always want to encourage our listeners is to take what it is that we bring, run it through your own self, but you have to remain true and you have to know your child and your household and your family, and you know what works for you guys. And, you know, you have to be responsible and do that. But I want to shift the conversation just a little bit, and I want to go and I want to talk a little bit about teenagers and dating. And I want to talk about the use of physical contact and physical, the use of expressing themselves through physical touch and through physical contact. And where I'm coming from with that is, you know, I'm an 80s baby. And so, you know, Friday nights when I'm home, I look forward to watching the Cosby Show reruns on TV One. And, you know, yesterday they had an episode on where Rudy was talking about one of the guys in her class that kept picking on her. And her sisters thought it was funny because I believe it was Denise that was like, oh, he likes you, you know. And then, of course, Dr. Huxwell was like, oh, you know, you don't be hitting on my child, you know, so forth and so forth. And Denise was able to point to her body and she had these bruises from when one guy pushed her into a brick wall and, you know, another guy did something else. And she thought it was funny because this was his way of expressing his level of admiration and, you know, like for her and so forth and so forth. And I remember growing up that when somebody would pull my hair, they would say, oh, they like you, or they this, or they that. When do we start teaching our children about physical boundaries and those lines that that just don't get crossed with interacting with someone of the opposite sex?
Immediately.
Okay.
How as the child grows, you teach them on the level that they can receive.
Mm.
So whether the child is 3, 4, 5 going to school, teach them this is where it's appropriate in this household, and where here we hug on each other, we love each other. When you're at school, somebody hands you something, if they touch you inappropriately, if they hit you hard and it makes you step back, that's inappropriate. Now we're gonna try to use the school process first, but as it escalates, that's grown folks' problem. So you bring that home and you tell that to us, and then we go down to the school and get that handled.
And again, listeners, you can call in at 443-380-2803. We definitely want to hear from you all today, your experience, your perspective. Do you agree? Do you disagree? Just jump in and join the conversation.
And you can think back and remember, but everybody in here has known a toddler or two. That first word when they're 2 years old is no.
No.
So that no, you can build off of that, because a lot of people like to rob their child of that strength because they think that they're being
defiant,
disrespectful. Right. Use that strength in your child. So when they're 2 and that no, it's appropriate to say no, this is mine, if it is actually your toy or your, but you have to share. There are all these situations. No, you don't get to push me. No, you don't get to stand in my face and yell at me.
Oh, that's powerful.
And
yeah,
once you step back and walk away, where do you go to tell it? Because as a child, you should always be telling it to somebody, an auntie, a neighbor, a counselor, a teacher. There's somebody that's going to listen to you. And you should always, as a child, you should always be telling it.
Now, 2 weeks ago, we talked about the impact of mental abuse on our young people. And one of the stats that came up 2 weeks ago was that a lot of young people are aware of mental abuse that's happening within the relationships of each other as young as middle school. But a lot of them were not speaking out on it, and a lot of them stated they did not know where to go. So in what you're saying, as far as equipping our children with knowing that no is okay and to utilize the no, I think the next step is to not only make sure that your child is equipped with knowing that they can come and talk to you, and making sure that yourself as a parent is not overreactive or over, I don't know, like when your child tells you something, that your response, like just making sure that your response continues to have your child continue to feel safe.
Please don't start screaming and yelling.
Yes. I hear that so much in therapy. But also, you know, making sure that you as the parent utilize different resources like Google and certain things like that to know another place that you can point and direct your child if for some reason that child does not feel, you know, comfortable with talking to you. Maybe some friends, I don't know, a youth leader, a pastor, APS, CPS, whatever, you know, whatever agency, you know, you feel comfortable with. It's very important that the more we equip our children, the better they are with being able to speak out and talk about it. Because one thing is for sure is that the media is definitely equipping our children with the messages that they want them to have, which is not always the message that we as responsible parents want them to have.
That's a good point. Uh-huh. Not only the media, but I want to go back to the point you made about the sitcoms that you were watching, the television shows. When on those shows that a physical interaction occurs, that physical abuse occurs, what it does is it starts to normalize physical things that are inappropriate.
Mm-hmm.
And that's never safe, you know. So at what point does normalizing that behavior, whether it be on the show, like you spoke about, the girl ended up with the bruises, or a parent choosing to use physical intervention as discipline and it goes too far, at what point is it too much? At what point is normalizing it will become a problem?
You know, and I want to speak to this idea of normalizing with this generation, because, you know, we talk years back about how, I don't know, what was the generation? The boomers. I think during that generation, we didn't really well, I'm not a part of that generation, but for those who are, I think that the conversation and topics of mental health was not really prevalent. You know, it wasn't really something that they talked about very often. And, you know, I guess after the boomers, there was the, what was it, Generation X? Now, I believe, I do believe that I'm old enough to qualify for Generation X. And Generation X, I believe my generation is where we became aware of mental health. You know, it wasn't still a popular topic to talk about, but after X came, what, Y, the millennials? Right. I don't know where we are. What generation we in? What, we in the millennial phase?
Yes.
We're in the millennial phase. It's almost a joke. You know, when I was doing school therapy last year and I would walk the halls of a lot of high schools, I would hear kids in the hallway like, girl, you know you bipolar. Take that depression somewhere else and sit down. You know, blah, blah, blah. Even on Facebook, you say, oh my goodness, this weather is bipolar. One minute is fall, the next minute is summer. You know, and so it has become good. This generation has this unique way of normalizing things to the point where it's a conversation and, you know, this takes the stigma away. You know what I'm saying? Like, even with being fat, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's now cool to be whatever, mm-hmm. you know, like it doesn't really matter. If you're bald headed and don't have hair, it don't matter, girl, because I buy my Remy, you know, I buy this. You know, this generation just kind of normalizes everything. Like, mm-hmm. there's no stigma. But the flip side, or the dangerous or the negative side to that, is that when it does become serious, I find it in my practice that I've had a hard time communicating to young people, this is a boundary. This is not okay interaction. You know, oh no, girl, he hits me. You know, like that's just how we do, you know, but it don't matter because he still pays for my nails and he still pays for my hair and lights is on and my this is that and so forth. So it's almost become so normal to the point where it's tolerated, you know, and it's talked about in music, it's on social media, you know, they got memes about it, they make jokes about it, it's on shows. Help me, y'all. How can we really begin to find that balance? Where's that balance?
Because it's, in my opinion, it's not okay to use those terms, bipolar, schizo, cray cray. I mean, as we spoke about, words have power. We spoke about that a couple of weeks ago. So to joke that way, I don't believe it's best. I mean, that's the starting point. You know, when those type of terms are used, it can have a negative impact on people.
Okay, we're going to pause 1 second. We have our first caller of the day. Hello, caller.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm good. This is Wendy. So I was calling in because, one, I want to say I enjoyed your carriage and, you know, talking about your upbringing and things of that nature. And I could definitely relate in why I got into the field of counseling. One of them, I came from a blended family. I am one out of 15 children. And my dealing with physical abuse, I really didn't get like spankings or anything like that growing up. However, my oldest brother, he's deceased now, but my oldest brother, he was on drugs, crack cocaine and things of that nature. And he was a woman beater. So he used to beat on like his girlfriends and his ex-wives and stuff like that. So when he would get high, sometimes we would get into it, even though he was a lot older than I was. I always been, when my father was living up until like the age of 10 or whatever, he always protected me from anybody. And even though, you know, my mother was in the house and she was catering to the other children, I was like the youngest and I was the baby girl and my father didn't, you know, play anything like that. But when he died, matter of fact, after the repast, my oldest brother came up to me and was like, oh, you don't have John Boy now to protect you. And he threw me into a trash can. Wow. And I was only like 10. Yeah, I was 10 years old, 9, turning 10, 10 years old. And from that moment, I just became a fighter. I started fighting anybody and everybody. And then I was dealing with depression. But of course, when you're young, you don't even notice any of that or take note to, oh, you need mental health and things of that nature. So my defense, I just became a fighter. So I was in school, I was angry, I was fighting everyone. But then the church stepped in and, you know, they kind of nurtured me. Like I'm a spiritual person, so I believe in, you know, God and interventions and things like that. So he always sent someone to like guide me in each chapter of my life. So then ran to the church. And it just so happened that one of the pastors at the time, well, one of the ministers at the time, he wound up molesting me or touching me or whatever. And then I had another trust issue. And then when I went to school where I thought my teachers, you know, like you guys were talking about at first, what goes on in the house stays in the house. You don't tell anybody. But then I became real close to one of my teachers by the time I got to the sixth grade. And I started talking to her, just casual conversation, because I figured I can trust her. And then when I told her, she went to CPS, wound up calling different people, and I didn't know. And then they pulled me out of the classroom, and I didn't want my family to be, you know, broken up or anything. But I couldn't stand my brother, so I was like, yeah, he's a crackhead. He's living in the garage and, you know, those things of that nature. But then I became angry, and that developed more trust issues where – now I'm not telling nobody. And then they try to put me in counseling. I do believe I needed it, but I shut down because I couldn't trust the people at school. Couldn't trust the guy at church. I couldn't trust anybody. But now that I'm older and when I became, I think like 20, 25, that's when I left the church. I left everyone alone. I wound up moving out, far away. And that was like my on the mount experience where I just totally let God deal with me. And I thought I was healed, but you're really not healed until you tried it with certain tests. That's what I believe. And it wasn't until I got married where I thought, you know, I was healed. I had things to bring to the table. My husband had things, you know, to bring to the table. And then one day he went and hugged me from behind. And normally I'm the initiator in everything because I took that dominant role, like, and then became scared too of people inflicting stuff on me. So I always been the initiator. So one day I was washing dishes and my husband went to go hug me from behind, and immediately I tensed up because I was afraid. And he was like, why are you tensing up? And I'm like, and I didn't really want to share, you know, different experiences that I had with different people like touching me at a younger age. And then I I had to, because I didn't want to hurt my husband, I had to immediately go turn back to God, turn back to my faith. Like, you got to deliver me from this because I'm in return hurting someone else. But now as a counselor, I use all my experiences, and it can go both ways. Sometimes whatever you, the trauma that you go through, if you're not healed from it or if you don't get the proper things that you need to heal, then it can, like, be a disaster in your life. But if you look at it as in a positive, you know, manner or way or whatever fashion, then it could be turned to help someone else. So everything that I went through, I wound up trying to relate to, like, my clients or people that I, you know, come in contact with. But yeah, that's about it.
But you know, your story is just so powerful, and I want to thank you so much for calling in, Miss Wendy.
No, you are.
Yeah. So listeners, you know, Miss Wendy's story is so powerful and is so popular because we talk about so oftentimes once we have been abused, oftentimes we look at the abusive response being someone turning around and then physically abusing or showing abuse in the same way in which it was received. But sometimes she brought up a point about how when her husband went to go hug her, she felt as though she was hurting him back. Yeah, it was a trigger for her. And so, you know, I think so oftentimes we minimize the power of triggers, and we minimize how when those things have not been properly addressed, the impact that they may have. And, you know, sometimes you do think that you're healed or you're whole or, you know, that you've dealt with something. And she is 1,000,000% correct. You just don't know that you're healed until that trigger has
see you tested.
Yeah.
And see whether or not your response is different.
Absolutely. You know, and I've always likened that topic to a game I used to play on a computer. It's this free game called Minecraft or Minesweeper, the little boxes. And, mm-hmm. you know, when you click on the boxes, it gives you a number, and that number tells you how many bombs are around. And, you know, so you got to kind of keep clicking away and make sure that you don't touch the bomb. But that's kind of how our life is. You know, we cover things and we mask things, and especially women. Women are the queens of wearing a mask. I mean, if there's a blemish, there's makeup. If there's no hair, there's weave, you know, whatever it is. I mean, if there's fat, there's a Spanx. You know, we have figured out.
We just keep it going.
We just keep it going, you know, until we don't. You know, and sometimes when we don't address it, it's too late. You know, that bomb has.
It just sits there. Emotionally, those emotional scars continue to go with you wherever you go. They stay there no matter how old you get. And when you get into a pressure cooker situation, emotionally, you get into a pressure cooker situation, it'll boil over.
It will. And so we do want to shift the conversation a little bit, and we want to talk about compassion, having compassion, not only just for the victim, but also having compassion for the voice of the abuser. And co-host William, I know you and I differ a little bit on this. Before I go in, I see you stewing. I'm going to let you go ahead on and jump on the call.
You give your point of view, and then I'll share mine.
Okay. I definitely, we've been going back and forth, but I feel like I feel like every abuser has a voice, you know, and sometimes we are quick to shut them down, and we're quick to be like, oh, that jerk, that this, that, you know, we don't want to hear anything from them. But what I realize is that every abuser has a story, right? And I think that in recent times, this past year, I don't know what is in the air this year, but TV has been doing a great job of presenting the voice of the abuser. So, for example, FX did a series on O.J. Simpson, and now there's getting ready to become a series on the Menendez brothers. And I definitely want to dive in and talk about that, but we have a caller on the line. Caller, how you doing?
Hello. Hi, my name is Sandra. I missed 5 minutes of the show, but I was wondering if your guest talked about how things are today with those people involved.
Okay, well, I'll let her.
Hi, Sandra, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
Well, you know that every story doesn't have a happy ending, right?
That's true.
Okay, so eventually what I had to do was come to a state of no contact.
Okay.
Because, I mean, even at...
Can you explain that state of no contact a little bit and then how you get there?
State of no contact is where you cut off all contact with someone, where there's nothing. There's no telephone, there's no Facebook, there's no contact whatsoever. They aren't supposed to contact you, and you don't contact them.
Now, how does that play out with the rest of your family who are looking on and thinking, wow, she won't even talk to Joe? Or
my family, like, I'm sure you heard the part of the show where we were talking about I grew up in the South. And yes. The South is one that what happens in this house stays in this house. So even if the house includes the neighborhood and the community, and my family is one such that they won't speak out of turn. Nobody will take a lead or a voice. Once that matriarch in my family passed away, and she was affectionately called Big Mama, but once she passed away,
my grandmama was called Big Mama.
everything just kind of dispersed, and everybody went in their own directions. And I had a number of great aunts along with that Big Mama. So one by one, as they passed away, each one of their lines just kind of broke off and went off to themselves. So there isn't any extended family to say step up or speak in or try to contact me to mend those fences. The reason that I had to go to no contact is because the behavior did not change.
Okay.
By this time, everybody is grown. Okay, I went no contact a couple of years ago, and an incident happened. And at 45, I looked myself in the mirror and said, this is now your fault. Because you left your mother's house at 17. You left her purse at 25. You pay all your own bills. You're physically capable of taking care of yourself. So if you are choosing to enter into this environment knowing what's going to happen, this is now your fault.
What suggestion do you have, or what nugget of wisdom do you have for the person who's not able to go no contact or is choosing not to go no contact?
Well, those two answers for me would be different, because if you're in a situation where you can't go no contact, then what I say to you is, one, I need you to create an emergency list. That emergency list, put a number of people's names on it. When you're sad, who can you go to that will make you flip that emotion into something that's happy? Who is it that helps you build your self-esteem? Who is it that helps support you, that no matter what you're going through, if you go to them, you know that when you walk away, you're going to feel stronger? Because one of the tactics that I had to use when I was in that situation of no contact is something I like to call FOCs, and I call them families of choice.
And thank you, caller. Keep
These
going.
Are families that were strong in places where my family was weak. So I could just go and sit and be around these families and actually witness what love was, and actually witness how forgiveness happened, and actually be in an environment where I didn't have to be on guard because I didn't know whether there was going to be an emotional landmine tossed at me or people were actually going to begin to physically fight around me. And experiencing that peace and being able to relax in an environment, be around people that actually truly unconditionally love each other, was very helpful for me.
You know, and I'm glad you went there, because one of the things, and before we go back to you, because we are going to go back to talking about the voice of the abuser in one second, but what I want to talk about is, even as a professional, you know, and don't hate me for saying this, partner, but you know, I was one who kind of shied away from working with women of domestic violence situations. And one of the things that I found for myself is, where you said you had to do a point of no contact, I found myself there often because I sometimes felt that I walked away being more angry than they were at their own situation. And, you know, I exhausted a lot of energy and a lot of effort in trying to help them get out, get away, make a different choice, do something different. And the fallout that I was going through when they chose to go back was just emotionally too much for me. And so typically, as a rule, I don't work with that population. And I began to get a little angry with that population of women until I took a training. I did a compassion training, which really helped me to see things from a different perspective. And the training was set up in this huge room. I want people to just imagine a huge room, and there are stations around the room. And one of the stations may be a church. The next station may be a social services center. Another station may be the bus. Another station may be a friend's house. And then there's always this little table that's in the middle that's filled with candy and cookies and so forth, right? And so the way the training happened was, you took a card, and your card was a character. And oftentimes this character was a woman who was in the middle of a domestic violence situation. situation. So you become this person, mm-hmm. and then you get the story, right? And then you had choices you had to make. But the caveat is whatever you brought to the training, you had to carry around with you the whole entire time. Mm. So you couldn't sit your bags down anywhere. You couldn't put your phone down somewhere, your keys, your books. And I was in school at this time, so it was a lot of stuff that we were lugging around. And they talked about how a lot of resources are made available for women, but the situation that they're in is with no place to stay. They're taking all their stuff with them. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you're adding 2, 3, and 4 children, and these resources are not placed together. It's not like social services is connected to housing, which is connected to your mama's house, which is connected here, you know. And then every time you went to a new station, another caveat was added to the story. So I want you to imagine being a young lady. Maybe you had 3 or 4 children. You've been with this guy since high school. You know, this is the only person you know. And, you know, he starts abusing you. So you decide, okay, I'm going to go to my mama's house because I'm going to see if I can move back home. Well, you will walk over to the station that was labeled mama's house, mm-hmm. and you pick up a new card. And so maybe at your card, it says, mama says, okay, you can stay here, but you can only stay for a week because I don't really have the space to accommodate you and your 4 children. Mm-hmm. So now your week is up and now you have to make another choice. If you choose to go home, you're going to the table where the cookies and the candy is. And of course, you pick up your new card and it says, okay, for the first 2 weeks, you know, your boyfriend, your husband or whatever, it's like, oh my gosh, baby, I'm sorry. I love you. You eat a cookie, you stay, but then the abuse escalates to the next level. Mm-hmm. So now you decide to leave again. And maybe you choose to go to a church. So now you walk over to the church and of course you go, you get counsel and you pick up your new card. And maybe the pastor says, hey, we're willing to do some counseling for you guys, but you need to be at home with your spouse. So then you go back, right? And mm-hmm. it's kind of like it just kind of continues to go on and on and on from there. And the devastating part of that was that some women's story ended in victory, but the majority of women ended in death. See, physical abuse always continues to escalate. Mm-hmm. And where we started off in the conversation where we talked about the grooming period, where mm-hmm. it starts with the mental abuse, it starts with the emotional abuse. Oftentimes, unfortunately, it can end in a space of death. And I realized in that moment that sometimes women go back because they feel they're out of options. They mm-hmm. don't have the resources. They're not always in a position where they can just pick up and get their own apartment and, you know, just move away. And sometimes even if you do, how far away can you move where that abuser may not come and stalk you or may not come and find you or may not come and demand, you know, that you come back anyway.
And that's a perfect segue into my response to your thoughts about the voice of the abuser. I'm not as sympathetic as you are to the abuser. Mm-hmm. As a mental health professional, I definitely understand the value and benefit of someone who says, I'm ready to make a change. I'm ready to move forward in my life and put in the work to be a better person. Mm-hmm. With that said, there's overwhelming evidence, overwhelming research to suggest that oftentimes the abuser does not change. There's overwhelming evidence to suggest that the person who's been caught in this level of behavior, mm-hmm. this level of pathology at a very early point in their life often continues that level of abuse. So I'm not as sympathetic as you are to the voice of the abuser.
And let me just plug that number again. It's 443-380-2803. Again, it's 443-2803. And, you know, when we say that I'm sympathetic to the voice of the abuser, it's not that I think that it's okay or justifiable their behavior. It's just that I'm a firm believer that every abuser has a story.
And that's fine. But get to us and tell us that story before you hurt people.
Well, and that's the beauty of On the Couch Radio, because we're letting people know that there's somebody out there that's willing to hear your story and give you the intervention and help that you need, you know, to be able to make better choices, make more positive choices. And online this week, I found a letter. It was an open letter written from somebody who was a physical abuser who then decided they wanted to write an open letter to all victims. Mm-hmm. They did not specify who the letter was written to, but if I can, I just wanted to take maybe about 2 or 3 minutes and read this letter. But I believe we may have a caller on the line. No, we don't. Okay, the call dropped. Okay, feel free to call back in if you want to. I'm going to take a few seconds and just read this letter. Oh, we do have a caller. They called back in. I'm going to take this call first. Hey, caller.
All right, hold on for 1 second.
Oh, 1 second. Hey, caller.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good, and you?
Hi there, how are you?
Good. My name is Valerie, and I just want to emphasize, I'm also a social worker, but I just want to emphasize a young lady who said that she went to the teacher and the...
the caller.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
And she called Child Protective Services, that they that the world has to understand that's an obligation. We can lose our job if we don't call. And I understood why she said she didn't trust, because she, you know, something happened as a result of her telling, but it's also a law that we have to report it.
Yes, that is absolutely a great point. Thank you so much for that caller. She's absolutely right. Whenever you confide with a licensed social worker or with a licensed professional, anybody who identifies as a professional in the helping field, we are what's called mandated reporters. And so if a situation ever comes out that some level of abuse was reported, and I'm glad that caller called in to make that point, because...
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you. We completely glossed over that, but that's very, very, very vital information, because we do have a creed of confidentiality, but confidentiality can always be breached in instances of someone reporting that they want to hurt themselves or somebody else. We are mandated by law to file that report, or else we could lose our job.
And if you find yourself in the throes of physical abuse, or you may be a perpetrator, or you need some level of support, again, you can always start with On the Couch Radio, onthecouchradio@gmail.com. Or the National Child Abuse Hotline is 1-800-422-4453. 1-800-422-4453. And the National Domestic Abuse Hotline is 1-800-799-7233. 1-800-799-7233. Because one thing that we always say here at On the Couch Radio, it's so important to stay connected.
Yes.
Because we know that isolation is where many mental health problems begin, and not only begin, but fester. And then before you know it, it's rampant, it's out of control, it's unmanageable, because the person tried to handle everything on their own.
Internally.
Absolutely. So if you need some support, reach out. We'll definitely get you in the right direction and make sure that you get the support that you need. And to the person who's listening, who's wondering, why didn't they just tell them to Google that information, or why are they wasting time giving all these numbers out? Because for anyone who's been in the throes of abuse, or work with people who are in the throes of abuse, oftentimes those folks are not connected. Mm-hmm. Internet access might be managed or governed. Phone access might be managed or governed. Connection to the outside world may be limited. So if a phone number might help, maybe that person can use the phone number at a time that's convenient, or the email address at a time that's convenient for them. It's all about staying connected. That's what we want to do.
Absolutely. And I just want to read this letter real quick before we close. And I want to hear you all, your closing thoughts on this letter. And I'm sorry, listeners, we didn't get to cover everything that we wanted to cover today. This conversation is just so... It's just so vast, and we're probably going to have to pick up with this in some way, shape, or form again next week to continue the conversation. But the letter goes like this. It says, "Hello, sweet soul. I'm writing this letter to try to explain myself. I'm not sure if I can ever make up for what I did to you, but believe me, it haunts me every day. I'm not perfect, nor do I pretend to be. But what I do know is if I had the chance to do it all over again, I would have hugged you instead of hurting you. See, when I saw you, I saw a light so bright that I couldn't ignore. You and all your brilliance made me want to be as close to you as possible. I wanted to know you. I wanted to be with you. I wanted all these things, and I had no clue how to get them, and I didn't think I deserved them. So I lashed out at you because I thought you would never see me the way I see you. I hurt you because I was hurting. I wanted to show you love, but I don't know how to give that because love was never given to me. Not in a good way, anyways. Sometimes I feel evil knowing what I did to you. I hate it when it was done to me, and then I turned around and did the same thing again. Sometimes I feel like hell would be too good to me, but then again I wish for hell, because the pain of the fire would be a constant reminder of the inward pain I live with every day, knowing how much I hurt you. I tried to be the best I could, but life didn't allow it. I could offer 1,000 reasons why I did what I did. I could blame the world, or tell you that you deserved it, but you didn't. You didn't deserve what I did to you. If you could see the truth of my heart, you would see that I did love you. I know it's crazy and twisted thing to say because I didn't show it properly, but I didn't know how. And I still don't. What happened had nothing to do with you. You did nothing wrong. And I know my words were like lashes to you, but please let it go. They meant nothing. Everything I said was really how I felt about myself. I wanted you to feel what I was feeling. I wanted you to be like me because I know I could never be like you. I don't want you to be alone in this pain. I tried to drag you with me. If I could give you what you deserve, you would be clothed in the finest garments and adorned with jewelry, and you would always have the biggest piece of cake. You were so wonderful to me, but I didn't handle you with care. I didn't know what to do with you. Your light shines so brightly that it was hard for me to even look at you. Why didn't I have a chance to shine like you? Why were you so lucky? I am sorry. I'm sorry for what I did to you. I'm sorry I made you cry. I'm sorry that I took away your trust. Please don't blame everyone else for what I did to you. I'm all messed up. I didn't get it right. It doesn't mean that there isn't someone else who can love you the way you deserve to be loved. One second. But I am sorry. I'm so sorry. Please forgive me and move forward. Don't let my stupidity hold you back from shining the way you were meant to shine. You are such perfection to me. Don't let me take that away from you. I don't deserve that much power in your life. I am nothing. I mean nothing. I am insignificant. Please forgive me and forget me, because I'll vanish if you do, and I'll never reappear again. Regretfully, you know who.
Well, I see it's a couple different ways that I can take that. Of course, that's the voice of the abuser in a letter to his victim. If the abuser is ready to make change,
mm-hmm.
then I will take that as a step in the right direction, because we know a journey of a million miles starts with a step.
I'll take that
as a step in the right direction. However, understanding the cycle of abuse and how things often work, that can also be taken as a form of
manipulation. Yeah, a lot of code in that letter, sis.
It was a lot of code. I was waiting on y'all to go there. Wait a minute now. I was waiting on y'all to go there.
There's a lot of stuff in there.
Come on with it.
I don't hear what you say. I see what you do.
Uh-huh.
So I'm not that letter. Very well done, partner. Very well done.
Now, hold on. I didn't write this letter.
I understand.
It's just our job to represent all these.
The way you orated it. But I there's a whole lot of stuff in there that is.
You're not feeling it. You're not buying it.
I'm not, because there are too many consequences. Let's talk about consequences, right?
Uh-huh.
There are too many consequences to physical abuse.
Right.
Right. And as we wrap up, let's highlight some of those things.
But before we wrap up, let's keep in mind that while you may not buy it, and while you may not buy it with your healthy mental emotional selves going on, many of our listeners are buying it.
Mm.
They just are.
Mm.
But even more importantly, many of our teenagers are buying it, and they're buying it every day. And so that's why I thought it was important, because these are the messages that they're getting. And we have to be open enough to acknowledge it and educate on it. But go ahead. What were you going to say that, Anita? And then I want you to go ahead on and talk about some of the consequences. And then we're going to have to wrap up. We ran out of time today.
They're buying. When you say that the teenagers are buying it, mm-hmm. they're buying that temporarily and staying in the cycle of abuse.
They're staying in the cycle.
That letter is a sincere apology from an abuser.
No. What I mean is that the letter that I read is kind of like a template. It's kind of like the things that abusers say mm-hmm. to the mm-hmm. person.
That's how they draw them back in.
Yes. Mm-hmm. But what I'm saying is that many women, even on a teenage level, are accepting of this. And that's how the cycle continues, because they say, oh, okay, baby, I love you too.
Because the problem in our community is that we do not show true unconditional love. So
say
our
that
children.
Again. Wait a minute, say that again.
We do not show true unconditional love.
Mm.
So our children have no reference. They don't know what true unconditional love is.
Wow. And so, William, I think you wanted to talk about some consequences.
Well, we ran out of time. The whole point that I would like to make is that there is a chance for a better day. If you're caught up in the mix of physical abuse, whether you're the victim or the perpetrator, reach out. If you want to send us an email, we'll definitely connect you. We'll point you in the right direction. On the Couch Radio,
at gmail.com. Thank you all so much for listening. Y'all have a wonderful Saturday.
Thank you for tuning in to On the Couch Radio. Join us again next week at 11 a.m. for conversations that might not come up at the dinner table, but are sure to come up here on Praise 106.1.